Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomé River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Oh, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, people. Just in case you're joining the second hour for right now, just in case you missed the first hour, we had a kind of a dynamite first hour. I was just talking to Monica Schaefer. I think I gave her the wrong number earlier, but I gave her the number. She's going to call in. We're going to have a great show with her for sure. But before we do that, I'm going to see if I can pull something up on my phone. We were talking about South Africa. If you missed the first hour tonight, please, God, when we get the archives up, we'll probably have the archives up within an hour after the show. Go and listen to that because, thank you, Sam. Just tell me, we have Monica on the air, and I'm going to bring her up real quick. But if you will, go to the archives as soon as you can in case you missed it, because our dear brothers and sisters in South Africa, man, they are facing annihilation. It looks to me like, if I had to say it, it's kind of like to get away with them, to exterminate them, because they have their power cut off. They some Wi-Fi, but not enough to run the telephones. They have no water and no electricity. And I read this. Listen, I read this prayer a couple of weeks ago. We had the dear little Miss Miller on from South Africa. And this is called the Day of the Vow Prayer. I'm going to read this again in their honor. And also to my buddy Jim Zim in Arizona, who we dedicated this show to. Jim Zim, Simon Roach, and all my other South African buddies there, and all of our dear ancestors who fought on the Battle of Blood River in December the 16th, 1838. Listen, here it goes. This is the English translation. This is the prayer that was created and given the day, I think, before the battle, or the day of the battle, right there within a few hours of the battle, where just a handful of Boer Afrikaners stood against 30,000 of the Zulus' best, and they wiped the earth with them. They killed so many Zulus that the river there turned red with their blood, hence the name Blood River. And before that battle, this prayer was read, and I'm going to read it, then we're going to go back to Monica. We stand here before the holy God of heaven and earth to make a vow to him that if he will protect us and give our enemy into our hand, we shall keep this day and date every year as a date of thanksgiving, like a Sabbath, and that we shall build a house to his honor wherever it should please him, and that we shall also tell our children that they should share in that with us in memory for future generations, for the honor of his name will be glorified by giving him the fame and honor for the victory. And people, that victory they did get, they prayed to Almighty God, and Almighty God saved them against every conceivable odd. There's no way in the world that less than 500 people with these muzzle-loaded rifles could defeat 30,000 Zulus, but they did. And that proves to me, it should prove to you, it should prove to every one of you, people who are so ignorant that you say you're atheist, you cannot refute evidence like that. How are we doing tonight, Miss Monica, Miss Braveheart?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Eddie. Thanks for inviting me on your show again. I always love talking to you.
Well, you're one of the few in the proud, because I'll tell you what, I think I have a few friends out there. We have a lot of people that hate my guts, but that's okay. I love their hatred. I take a bath in their hatred. It makes me, I drink their hatred. It makes me stronger. But, Monica, we've had, God knows, I think I dive and have a little bit of hatred every day turned against me. But, and it's not just me. It's all of our white brothers. We're hated. We're the most hated species that's ever lived. They hate us more than they do the AIDS virus. In fact, I think they worship the AIDS virus. They hate us more than they do this Kaboni virus. But the first hour, I just read that prayer, Monica, because we were supposed to have Simon Rush on. He was coming on for two or three segments of the first hour. But this wonderful, sweet blacks over there in South Africa, they've been so abused. They have cut the power. They've cut the water. They've they've got them living in a hell with no plumbing, no drinking water, no electricity, no Wi-Fi. So he couldn't come on our show. But I know we pretty much broadcast to the people listening to our show the hell that they're going through over there, the white people. And you know what? And it's coming to this country right here. You know what? Maybe God should hate me for saying, maybe God could kill me for saying this. But I'm almost hoping I can see it get that bad here, because I want to see all these self-hating white cucks, these self-hating white cucks that hate you. They hate Jesus. They hate Jesus Christ. They hate our God. They hate us for being Christians. They hate white people. You know, I hope I live long enough. It's almost worth me suffering to be burned alive just to see some of them suffer by their precious communist black brethren. You know, with that, Monica, I'm going to shut up. I'm not going to go off on that rant anymore. But, you know, Monica, we talked about earlier. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to shut up. You tell the people what we talked about and what we're going to talk about tonight. Go ahead, Miss Monica.
Okay, yeah, we're going to talk about Ernst Zundel. At least, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's what you had invited me to talk about today. And but I do want to just comment, I did listen to more than half of your first hour there, so I caught that about South Africa. And I just have to say to people, you know, this is what is coming our way if we do not stop this from happening. And I have to say, you know, your sentiments about the folks who are self-hating whites, you know, it has gotten to the point, I think you or Matt were saying, you know, we can't waste any more time on them. We have to work with the people who are awake, and, you know, they will either wake up themselves and come over to our side, or they will not. It's almost like if you don't wake up by now, maybe nothing will wake you up. And the protocols of the Elders of Zion, they say the Goyim will become agents of their own destruction. And, you know, the protocols of the Elders of Zion, that's a Jewish manifesto, you could call it, that's written in their book, you know, that, and how they do that is by deception. So I do always have some understanding for the deceived masses, because I was one of the deceived. I was one of those until really not that long ago. I mean, I should be ashamed of myself, but I'm not, because I can thereby have hope that others will wake up too. I mean, if I could wake up, others can too, you know, and it also gives me a little bit of insight into why is it that people are so deceived? Why do people believe what they're told and believe the media, the so-called authorities and all this? I guess it's just so hard for us to get it that somebody could actually be so evil as to, you know, be actively working against us when we have been told all our lives that the government is, you know, for us, for the people, by the people, of the people. Oh, wonderful democracy. And here we are facing a situation where the government is the enemy of the people. That is just plain and simple what it is. The government, our government, your government, my government here in Canada especially, is the enemy of the people. They are ruled by a hidden hand, and most of these people in high positions of power, they are completely compromised. They have, you know, either engaged in satanic, you know, rituals or pedophilia or just all these really, really bad things that are going on, which most people have no idea is going on. But back to what the topic was for today, because I know the first quarter is going to be over here really quickly, but Ernst Zundel, am I right? That's what we would like to talk about today?
Yes, ma'am, and I will answer your questions. I'll comment on what you just commented on when we come back for the break. But yes, ma'am, Ernst Zundel is foremost in our mind. You go ahead, dear sister.
Yes, just a little prelude. He is really one of the great heroes of our time. He is no longer with us. He died a couple of years ago, and he was the one who was persecuted, prosecuted, incarcerated for asking, did 6 million really die? And we're talking about this, you know, infamous story of World War II, the so-called Jewish Holocaust, which is really the Holocaust. And that, we'll talk about Ernst Zundel. He came over to Canada from Germany as a 19-year-old. He was deeply pacifist in his inclinations. He was he came over without anything, really, but he became a very successful, successful in what he did. He was a graphic artist, and so he made a lot of money doing that. He also ran against the senior Trudeau for prime minister. Like, he ran for the leadership of the Liberal Party, which, are we still there?
Yes, ma'am. I'm letting you roll. Yeah, you're doing a great job.
Okay, sorry. I just heard something there, and I thought maybe we'd gotten cut off. But anyway, he actually ran for leadership of the Liberal Party against Pierre Elliott Trudeau back in the day, and he was advocating for the German portion of the Canadian population, which was significant, the third largest ethnic group after English, French, and then German, many, many, many German immigrants and German people who weren't new immigrants, but of German heritage, German stock people. And they were being really treated very badly here in Canada because, you know, those big, bad, evil Nazis and Adolf Hitler, who was the most demonized man on the face of this earth. And, you know, once you wake up, you realize it's opposite. So anyway, that's what he was running on.
We have to go to a quick break. Miss Braveheart, we got to go to a quick break. And I've nicknamed her Miss Braveheart because if you listen to her, you'll know why that name fits her. Be right back, people. Hang on to your seats.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Thank you, Sam. People, thank you so much, dear Blood River Radio family. Thank you so much. And I hope old Jim Zim is listening tonight because Jim Zim is one of my precious brothers that we've dedicated tonight's show to. Monica made some great, rhetoric before the show. I mean, before we went to that break. And she talked about the Satan-inspired protocols, the protocols of learned elders of Zion. And they were definitely inspired by Satan because Satan would have to have supernatural knowledge to know so many years in advance of what's going on today. And the reason And Monica said, and I've asked the same question, why do so many good-looking, especially good-looking white people, you think they're smart, they're wealthy, they've got good trades, why do they hate themselves and start their own people? Well, and my answer is because they have been blinded by Satan. And people, I'll tell you what, if you will go to, I can't read it all because we don't have time. If you will go to your King James Bible and go to first chapter Romans 1 and start reading at chapter 19, at verse 19 and go through to verse 30. Go read the whole thing. Read first Romans, specifically starting at 19, verse 19, go through 32. And it'll tell you exactly where homosexuals came from, where why people were blind, why God blinded them. I'm just going to read this short verse. This is just part of it. You see, and I'll paraphrase, you see people today, they worship their creation other than their creator. You hear about acid rain, the ozone layer, global warming, global cooling, global this, global that. Well, see, they don't worship God. They're worshiping the earth. This earth will pass away. All right, this little brief verse, he says, and God changed the glory of they changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image like to be corruptible, like an image of man, birds, four-footed beasts, and creeping things. He's talking about idols. Wherefore God also gave them up. Here you go, people. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanliness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshiped and served the creature more than the creator. Okay, who is blessed forever. And here we go. For this cause, God gave them up into vile affections, for even their own women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving into themselves that recompense of their error which was met. People read First Romans, it'll tell you all about why we have so many conservatives. And let me tell you what, God got rid of them. God destroyed them. God led those Israelis out of Egypt captivity. I'm getting ready to cut this off. And guess what he did? He killed most of the original Israelis that he brought out of Egypt because they disobeyed him. They were wicked, they were cruel, they were evil, and he killed their sorry tails. And that's what we're going to have to do to defend ourselves. Now, I'm sorry it went so long, Miss Monica. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's all very, very good. I'm glad you read those verses. And it's just like when everything is upside down and backwards, then everything really is opposite. And earlier you were talking about hate and, you know, self-hating whites. And I commented how that has come about. It's through deception. And then, you know, you're saying, yes, it's Satan, through Satan. And everything that Satan does is, I guess you could say, just the polar opposite of life-giving and opposite of love, opposite of everything that is beautiful. It is destructive. And there are Jews, high-ranking Jews, who have said this very, very openly. They have said, you know, we are the destroyers. It will never be enough what you give us or do. You know, we will always destroy. And that is just pure Satanism. And that's where we're at now with what's going on in the world right now, is basically a destruction. And, you know, they're wanting to destroy all our civilization. So that's where we're at. But I guess we could get off on quite a tangent here. And I do want to talk about Ernst Sandel. And perhaps a lot of people don't know who that is, or if they've heard of him and just have recollection of hearing about him in the mainstream media, they'll just make the assumption that, oh, that was some nutcase back in the 80s or 90s or whenever it was, you know. But so I'll just give a little synopsis, or please tell me in which direction you'd like me to go, tell the story about what happened to him. Maybe I'll just let you interject here for a moment.
Well, Miss dear Sister Braveheart, I've got to love Sister Braveheart. She's like my own younger flesh and blood sister. I apologize. I kind of went off on I'm the one that went off on a tangent. I couldn't help but comment on where this Satanism comes from, it comes from Satan, where this reprobate spirit, these homosexuals we see, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, please forgive me, because I wanted you to cover the whole story about Ernst Sundell as much as we can. We have about 35 minutes left. So if you will, tell them. And you know what? Ernst Sundell, they hate him because of what we've just been talking about, because he stood for everything that was good and he loved his race. And I'm shutting up. You go ahead, Miss Braveheart.
That's right. And he was particularly dangerous for the Jews because Ernst Sundell was such a decent man. You could not help but like him if you met him. Now, unfortunately, I never did meet him personally, but I have seen many of his videos. I have seen how he interacted with others. And I have heard also from, for example, when he was in prison in Germany, everybody loved him there. The guards all really, really respected and liked him a lot. He just was a very decent, kind man. And that comes across very clearly in his talks, his interviews. I listened to one the other day where he was talking to a student, a young student who came to see him because I guess they were doing a writing project about him. Good for that student to, you know, do that, because it's such a politically incorrect thing to do, is to talk to somebody who is branded with that weaponized label of Holocaust denier. That is such a weaponized word that is meant to shut down anybody's ability to think and to immediately brand that person as a bad person, you see. So anyway, I just mentioned before the break that he came over from Germany, war-torn Germany. He was born right at the beginning of the war, so he was a baby and a toddler and a child during the war. Then he came over as a 19-year-old to Canada. He looked for a country where there was no draft. He was a pacifist. He did not want anything to do with war. Who can blame him? This is what he was born into, you know, and the destruction, the utter destruction of Germany. And so Canada had no draft. That's where he came, and it was the land of his dreams. But these dreams were quickly shattered, actually, when he started to learn the truth, and he didn't know the truth about World War II, and you know, he, like everybody else, believed what the propaganda was, you know, that's what was said, and so that's what he believed. But it was actually a so-called survivor from one of the camps that set him on the road to learning about the truth. That's at least that's how I remember the story. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I think the man that started him on the road to learning the truth was somebody who had been there, and he started to tell him, look, this, it's not how they told us or told you. Anyway, he started to figure things out pretty quickly. He's a smart man, and this was also, he was interested in this because he felt that this could restore Germany's honor. He felt strongly that we must restore Germany's honor, because Germany was just down in the gutter as far as, you know, the reputation and what the world thinks about Germans and Germany. And so he started to look into this. And by this time he was very well to do with his graphic artist business. And like I said earlier, he had actually run politically against the senior Trudeau, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, at the time. And he had many interviews. He had a large audience. And when he started to figure out the truth about World War II, he talked with everyone. He talked with Jews. He talked with Muslims. He talked with Germans. He talked with, just anybody. He talked with anybody and everybody who would have a conversation with him, and this was just most interesting, and people could look these things up. I'll come back, I guess, after the break. I can hear the music.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You're doing great, Miss Monica. People, we'll be right back after this break.
Jesus, liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition. And let's go.
And with that, a spy satellite is on its way into orbit after a successful SpaceX launch of a Falcon 9 rocket this morning from the Kennedy Space Center. If you're out driving around shopping, you're not alone. A new survey from the National Retail Federation shows more than 150 million people in the United States plan on shopping today, known as Super Saturday, which is the last Saturday before Christmas. USA Radio News caught up with this youngster at the mall who explains why he's out shopping on one of the busiest days of the year.
Because I put everything off to the final minute. The malls were very busy, very packed.
If you haven't started your shopping, no worries, as Christmas is 6 days away. USA Radio News.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand and you care about your credit, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it'll take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 6 million people with credit card debt. Without destroying your credit, they can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. The program works. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-406-0046, 800-406-0046. That's 800-406-0046. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services, Inc., 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM 1492, Oregon DM 80092. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation. Commission License Number DC 83. Service may adversely affect an individual's credit. Non-payment of debt may lead to additional finance charges or collections activity, including legal action, not a loan company.
Lawmakers on Capitol Hill continuing to work on a coronavirus relief package. Delaware Democratic Senator Chris Coons on when he expects a vote.
I think we will finally pass this package on Monday or Tuesday here in the Senate. We're here this weekend to vote on more judges, but we frankly should be closing this deal and delivering billions of dollars of assistance to Americans who are facing eviction, hunger, joblessness, and homelessness.
Senator Coons speaking there on MSNBC. Distribution of Moderna's coronavirus vaccine is getting underway this weekend after FDA approval.
Distribution of Moderna vaccine has already begun. Moderna has moved vaccine from their fill-finish manufacturing sites to McKesson, who will serve as the central distributor.
General Gus Perna, COO of Operation Warp Speed, speaking during a Pentagon briefing on Saturday. You're listening to USA Radio News.
The Venus is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, we are right back. You're listening to Eddie the Bombardier Miller. You're listening to Blood River Radio. We have Miss Monica Braveheart Schaefer on. She was, tell you what, she has been there. She's done it, been there, done that. She was a political prisoner in Germany. I'll make this quick bow before we go right back to her. She's talking about Mr. Ernest Dundell. But I want you to know, in case you haven't tuned in before, in case you don't, one of the few people who don't know about Miss Monica Schaefer, a.k.a. Braveheart, she went to Germany. She was in prison. She would not back down because she made a little short video apologizing to her mother. She mentioned earlier in the show that she used to be kind of like one of these, like what we call millennials today, a hippie, kind of a self-hater. You know, she drank the Kool-Aid about the Holocaust. She found out later it was all a crock. She made the video apologizing to her deceased mother, saying, "Mommy, I'm sorry, I was wrong about the Holocaust." That's who we have on tonight. She's a great lady, and she's talking about Mr. Ernst Zundel, another German of German extraction, who was a hero to all white people who are trying to battle against the evil lies of the Holocaust, and he paid the price for it. And back to you, Miss Monica.
Yeah, okay. So I'll just fast forward a little bit here for Ernst Zundel. He started to figure things out about this story of the gas chambers, that this could not be true. There was just a mountain of evidence that spoke against that, contrary to what they always have us believe. Because one thing that happens when you start questioning
go ahead, Miss Monica.
Yeah, okay. When you start questioning that story, you are told that there are mountains of evidence for this. This is the most documented event in all of history, is this Holocaust, this gas chambers and whatnot. But they don't present us with the evidence. They do not present us with the evidence. In fact, evidence is not allowed. That's what we experienced in the German courts. But in Canada, in the 1980s, there were what is now referred to as the Great Holocaust Trials, and that is when Ernst Zundel was put on trial for publishing this little booklet called Did 6 Million Really Die? And it wasn't even authored by himself. It was authored by, I have it in front of me right here, Richard E. Harwood. But anyway, he republished it and distributed that. At the time, this was before internet, Ernst Zundel, he had a huge mailing list on this side of the ocean as well as the other side of the ocean, huge mailing list. He would mail out newsletters and different things and try to, you know, educate people about the true history. So they went after him, they being Jewish groups, Jewish organization, Jewish individuals. He was charged for, quote-unquote, spreading false news. And in 1985 in Toronto, there was a trial that lasted many weeks. And then there was an appeal trial in 1988. Now, these trials are extremely important in the history of anything to do with Holocaust fact and fiction, because it's the rare. Yeah.
Well, we have a caller on the line who's very educated in what you're talking about. Matter of fact, he has met Mr. Ernst Zundel. Would you like to take the call right now?
I certainly would. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. His name is Mr. Buddy. He's a great friend of mine. He's a very knowledgeable man. He wants to come on. He has some comments to make. He has, like we say, he's met Mr. Ernst Zundel in person, and he really. As a matter of fact, you spoke to him on the phone about a week ago from my truck over in Jonesboro, Arkansas. So I introduce you, Miss Monica, to my friend and yours, Mr. Buddy. How are you doing tonight, Mr. Buddy?
Hello, hello there, Eddie. I'm doing fine, and first I would like to ask Miss Monica, how are those warrants being carried out against you right now?
I didn't catch what you said there, but it's nice to meet you on the phone, and it's really nice to meet somebody that did meet Ernst Zundel in person. And I was just starting to tell about the trials, which were so momentous, because in these trials, evidence actually did enter the courts. And so that's what I was going to start talking about, but maybe you could share a story with us about your meetings with Ernst Zundel.
Okay. The reason I ask you, in the Free Speech Monitor from Paul Fromm in Canada, he mentioned your situation where there were some warrants issued for you in Alberta. And it seems like in reading that article, they were trying to set you up for some kind of an arrest. And with that in mind, it is a perfect parallel to what happened to Ernst Zundel. Now, after all of the troubles that the Jews caused him in Canada, including sending two bombs through the mail to him, plus burning his house down, and going through the court agony that he went through, he finally was able to come to America on a visa to live with his wife, Ingrid, over there near Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. He had gone through all of the procedures to keep everything as legal, to keep his record as pure as it could be, because he knew someone would love to get a hold of him through some trumped-up charge to kick him out of America. he had an application. Well, I'll go back a little bit. The immigration authorities here had issued him a work permit, a Social Security number. He had taken a medical. He had been fingerprinted, and he was waiting for a hearing on his immigration status so that he could become a permanent resident in America. And when the date came about for his hearing, the Immigration Service had to postpone it, and he kept in touch with them because he did not want to mess up anywhere. He wanted to make sure that he was there for the hearing. And he never heard from them until, I believe it was the 5th of February in 2003, a squad of immigration officers and everyone else with the shiny black boots and helmets and everything came to arrest him at his home for missing an immigration hearing. Now, that is a trumped-up charge to get him out of the country, which indeed is what happened. And as you know, America sent him out of the country to Canada, and the U.S. authorities told him he could not come back to America. Canada put him in jail in a 6x9 concrete cell in solitary confinement for 2 years, then sent him to Germany where he went on trial over there, where you're going to be convicted just for mentioning the word Holocaust. He served 5 years over there, and in all of this trouble that he did have, he was as pure as the driven snow in everything he did to try to live in America with his wife. And in this article that is in the Free Speech Monitor on your situation, you mentioned, I'm sure you're speaking of Canada, at that point there's no justice in Canada. Well, there's absolutely none in America, depending on which side of the issue you own. And I'd like to make one more comment. The American authorities are so strict in the immigration situation that they do all of that to one man. And yet there are anywhere from 11 to 20 million illegal immigrants in America walking the streets, many of them, most of them, receiving government assistance. And I read recently of one illegal immigrant that had been charged with 14 felony counts over the many years, and when he was released on the last one, they didn't even deport him. So I'd like your comments on all of that, if you would, please.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, of course. This just shows the agenda. The agenda is to destroy us, that is people who are of European extraction, you know, the white race, and to bring in all these illegals because they want to mix us all up and downgrade us, really. That's pretty plain and simple what is going on, plus destroy the culture, and then we have nothing to, you know, people won't fight for something that they don't have, if they don't have their culture. I guess I hear the music there.
Yes, ma'am, Miss Braveheart, you certainly do. Thank you, people, for listening. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Yeah.
This is Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more while listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. Everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I hope you're still hanging on, because we have one of our favorite people on tonight as guest. Her name is Miss Monica Schaefer, Miss Braveheart. That was the guest caller we had called in just a minute ago, one of my very dear friends. I tell you what, he graduated from high school before I was born. Can you imagine that? I'm a pretty old guy, but he is a great friend of white people. He's a great friend. He loves the German people, and he's a great admirer of Miss Monica Schaefer. And with that, I'm going to go right back. Miss Monica, you take off right where you left off.
Yeah, and I want to thank your friend for calling in. That was really great to hear him talk about Ernst Sandel and what happened to him and getting tricked into a situation where he was hauled out of the States, thrown into solitary confinement in Canada until they finally were able to deport him. And again, that happened after 9/11, when they had all this newfangled legislation that allowed them to hold him on some, you know, charges, and they didn't let him know who his accusers were. So there's some kind of a trial that takes place without him being able to set up any kind of a defense, because he'd not told who his accusers were and not really clear what the charges were. I mean, the whole thing is just completely, utterly without any logic or justice or anything that resembles what we thought we had, as you know, or what we learned in school that we had. And then in Germany, you know, 5 years in prison, not let out a day early, not like a lot of the other prisoners. If they're in there and they've got good behavior in jail, they generally get let out either at half time or two thirds or something, but not for political prisoners, not for people who speak the truth. So I was saying about those trials in Toronto, the most incredible things came out in those trials. Like, I'll just give you a few examples. Raul Hilberg, who was at the time, you know, the preeminent so-called Holocaust historian, was on this. He was the main witness for the prosecuting side, and he, under cross-examination, had to admit several very damning things that are damning for the story. For example, no autopsy ever showed the death by gas, you know, by poisoning gas. Another example, no documentary evidence existed or exists that there was ever a plan or an order or anything to murder the Jews. Nothing of the sort. So he had to admit all these incredible things that just basically puts their story into the trash bin. The other thing that happened is that there were some eyewitnesses, these so-called eyewitnesses. We always hear people say, oh, what about all those eyewitnesses who saw all these terrible things happen? Well, guess what? All of them got shredded on the stand. And what I mean is their testimony was shredded under cross-examination on the witness stand. Not a single one of their stories stood up to the scrutiny of, you know, just being asked some basic questions. They all fell apart. Their stories completely fell apart. So in the 1988 trial, there were no eyewitnesses, and Raul Hilberg did not return. They sent somebody else, and he made some excuse about, oh, you know, I'd have to reread in detail all the statements I made so they don't get tripped up or something like that. You know, when you lie, you have to make more lies. And so when you lie, you can never be certain of your own testimony.
It's hard to remember every single lie that you told.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's kind of an admission, you know. And apparently at the end of one of those, I don't know if it was the 85 or the 88 trial, the judge was so exacerbated that he just kind of banged his fist on the table or his gavel or whatever they call that thing and just said, "The Holocaust happened." You know, he's just like really... And by the way, the judge then in Germany, who was presiding there over Ernst Dundl's trial, you know, when he was on trial there and then got his 5 years, at the end of that trial, get a hold of this, he said, "It does not matter if the Holocaust happened or not. What matters here is that you broke the law, because it is, the law says you are not allowed to question it or to deny it or whatever, and that's what matters here. That's what's relevant here." I don't know his exact words, but that's essentially the message he was giving. It doesn't matter whether it happened or not. It's not relevant whether it happened or not. It's only relevant that that's kind of an admission without coming right out and saying that.
Yes, you know, Miss Monica, and I tell you, I think the reason they know that, you know, our persecutors, the Jew, the bought-off judges, the cucks, they know it's a lie. But here's the reason. Here's the thing. The reason, it's in my opinion, the reason they're trying to stamp out all traces of people brave enough to say it's a lie.
Are you still there?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, Miss Monica, I'm here. You know, the reason they want to stamp out people telling the truth is because of the younger generation. If they can keep these people, these young, mushy-headed kids in school, if they can separate them from the truth, if they can indoctrinate them with all these self-hating lies, like the Holocaust, Black Lives Matter, White Lives Don't, they figure they can get that done in maybe a generation or two, then they can turn the white people against themselves. They can get them to worshiping, licking the boots of the Jewish captors, licking the boots of their black captors. And I think that's why they hate them so bad. Miss Monica, why do you think they hate Ernst Zundel and others? I may have answered my own question. Ernst Zundel, did he represent all the truth tellers like you, like other people who have gone to jail, like Blood River? If they could stamp him out, was he an example? Did they make an example out of him to show us what's going to happen to us, Miss Monica?
You know, like I was saying earlier, he was particularly dangerous to them because he was such a good man. And you know, your friend who called in, he mentioned something how Ernst Dundl was really, he didn't have anything on his record. They couldn't find anything on him. Believe me, they searched and searched and searched to have some kind of dirt on him, even if it was just, you know, something he did in his youth, like, you know, steal a piece of bubble gum or something. No, they could not find anything on him. He was just this model citizen. He was a brilliant man. He was successful in what he did as in his career, and just such a kind and nice guy. And so then when he comes out with these things, and he's really good at you know, having conversation with people. And like I said earlier, he talked with everybody. He was willing to engage with everybody, whether they were Jewish or not Jewish. It just, he gave people the benefit of the doubt, and he was, that's why he was particularly dangerous, you see. And so, and now to the Holocaust lie, that is their linchpin lie. It's a key. If that one falls, and it is falling, let me tell you, it is falling, then everything else falls too, because this whole narrative of guilt, first it's just the Germans who are guilty, but this guilt has been extended to the whole white race. So, you know, you talk about the self-hating whites, and, you know, we're guilty of everything, supposedly, that ever happened that's bad on the face of this earth. But if the Holocaust is kind of at the center of that, and when we say something about immigration that, you know, we object to it, we don't like it, well, they right away trot the Holocaust out, because this will lead to the next Holocaust, this attitude that you evil racists have, you know. You know, before we run out of time, there's something really important that I also wanted to bring up about those trials, and that is concerning another great man, and that is Robert Faurisson, who also is no longer with us. And he came from France then over to Toronto to be, I guess, basically the main advisor to Ernst Sandl to give direction to the investigative team and to Doug Christie. Doug Christie was the great lawyer he was the lawyer for Ernst Sandl. And so Robert Faurisson really helped him out and advised him. And there's something that he kept on, or what his sister, she tells me in emails, she says, you know, there's five adjectives regarding the evidence that he had and to prove the non-existence of gas chambers. These five adjectives, they're physical, chemical, topographical, architectural, and documentary. So that covers it all. All of those aspects are the Holocaust, the hollow hoax. It's completely debunked through physical evidence, chemical evidence, topographical evidence, architectural evidence. Now, Robert Faurisson was the first, I think, to dig out these, you know, and get these architectural plans. So, you know, there were no gas chambers there at all. There were morgues, and yes, there were some crematorias, because they needed to take care of the bodies of those who did die of disease or whatnot. I mean, if you have a huge camp like that, some people do die, and it was all on water. Like, there was a lot of water around, because the water table was very high there, which speaks against gas chambers and, you know, all these, getting rid of all these bodies through any, you know, through burning them. It was impossible. And then documentary, that was the fifth one. And Robert Faurisson himself suffered badly. He was beat up many times. He was left for dead. And, you know, then the newspaper articles, they basically just dismiss it as, oh, well, you know, that's what you should expect if you're going to provoke the, you know, here's one that happened in 1989, and he was really beat up badly. He couldn't speak. He was conscious, but couldn't speak. But the Sons of the Memory of the Jews took responsibility for the attack, saying, "Those who deny the Holocaust should beware." You know, I mean, this is their attitude, and this is just written up in the paper, like, oh, of course, yeah, of course, this is how it is. So
we're about to run out of time, but what he did, he offended that patented trademark God that will have no other God before it, that Holocaust God. It's patented, it's trademark, it's worth probably trillions of dollars to the international juries. They've made trillions off of it. They've blackmailed probably every country in Europe. But Miss Monica, I wish we had more time. I was going to ask you, how can we, the next show we come on, I want to ask you, how can we restore honor in the hearts of the German people, specifically the German youth? Miss Monica, we'll have to cover that question when we come back next time. Thank you so very much, Miss Monica. Thank you. Well, I'll be contacting you again very soon. We'll have to get you back on. And also, people, you need to go into our archives and listen. We did a three-show series on the Holocaust that Miss Monica did with Umberto Voss. God bless you, people. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Miss Monica. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, dear Blood River Radio, all the audience. See you next 26th, the day after Christmas, God willing. Good night.